Greetings. This is the voice of America's Sonny Young in Washington. Thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to another expanded 30-minute edition of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Stand up!
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports Show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up.
The 30th Africa Cup of Nations football tournament officially kicks off Saturday in Equatorial Guinea. The host country will play Congo Brazzaville in the opening match in the seaport city of Bata. And that will be followed by another Group A encounter, also in Bata, between Gabon and 2013 Nations Cup finalist Burkina Faso. On Sunday, the action will move inland to Ebebeyin, and Group B will be in the spotlight. 2012 Nations Cup champion Zambia is matched against the Democratic Republic of Congo, a two-time winner of the African Championship. And that will be followed by a fixture between 2004 Nations Cup winner Tunisia and the Blue Sharks from Cape Verde.
Voice of America.
I encourage our Voice of America listeners to stay updated with all the excitement of the 30th Nations Cup in Equatorial Guinea by tuning in the Sunny Side of Sports. The three-week competition will culminate February 8th with the crowning of a new Nations Cup champion in Bata. Now, Equatorial Guinea has had only 9 weeks to prepare for staging the Nations Cup, after Morocco dropped out because of Ebola fears. Our African football guru, David Legg, has been going group by group and taking a statistical look at the 16 competitors in the Nations Cup. This evening, David wraps things up with Group D.
Yes, Sonny, this one actually is also a group of death, but I think it's just been overshadowed in the media by Group C, a very tough group indeed. Let's start with Cameroon, 16 previous appearances, also champions four times, 84, 88, 2000, and 2002. 71 matches played, 37 wins, 20 draws, and 14 defeats. They are ranked 8th in Africa and 42nd in the world. Striker Vincent Aboubakar, who was outstanding in the qualifiers, is my key player. Their coach is Volker Fink from Germany, and they're known as the Indomitable Lions. Guinea have made 10 previous appearances. They came closest to snatching the title in 1976, when they finished runners-up behind Morocco. Their record, 11 wins, 12 draws, and 12 defeats. They're ranked 6th in Africa and 39th in the world. I chose midfielder Ibrahim Traore, who plays for Borussia Mönchengladbach in Germany, as their key player. Michel Dussier from France is their coach, and their nickname is the National Elephant. Talking of elephants, on to Ivory Coast, previous appearances 20. Best performance, champions way back in 1992. Their record, 36 wins, 19 draws, 26 defeats. They are ranked 3rd in Africa and 28th in the world. Their key player, no question about this one, no doubt whatsoever, their midfielder, Yaya Toure, who's just won the 4th straight CAF Football of the Year title.
All right, let's stand up for the winner, ladies and gentlemen, winning it for a 4th year running, Yaya Toure, everybody.
First of all, I want to thank Allah for all this achievement, you know. I've been very blessed all this year, you know. As well, I want to thank the football fans, and as well, I want to thank the CAF with the president, and as well, all the guys, his committee as well. And the last, thank you to Africa.
The coach is Herb Renard from France. Now, he's the man who led Zambia to the title back there in 2012, and their nickname, the Elephants. And last, and certainly not least, the team that's finished 3rd, Sonny, in the last 2 tournaments, Mali. we underestimate these guys at our peril. Their previous appearances are 8. Their closest to the title was in 1972 when they finished runners-up. In 40 matches, they've won 15, drawn 11, and lost 14. They're ranked 10th in Africa and 49th in the world. Their key player, undoubtedly, it's the Roma of Italy midfielder, Seydou Keita. The coach is Henri Kasperjak. He's a French citizen, but he was born in Poland. And their nickname is the Eagles. And that, Sonny, is a statistical wrap-up of the 16 contenders.
David, the Africa Cup of Nations originates in Sudan when the first tournament was held way back in 1957. So it does have a long history. And you've compiled some more historical facts.
VOA!
For our VOA football fans, why don't you give us some of them, David?
Yes, Annie, I've had a lot of requests, particularly from Nigeria, saying, you know, give us some facts about the Nations Cup. And what I've done, Sonny, is I've picked out 5. And the first one, obviously, is about who have been the champions. And it's Egypt, who have been crowned champions a record 7 times, followed by Cameroon and Ghana with 4 titles each. And, Sonny, the competition has been won by 14 of the 54 African Football Confederation member states. And of those 14, incidentally, 9 of them will be in Equatorial Guinea. Now, who has scored the most goals in all the Cup of Nations tournaments? It's none other than the Cameroon striker Samuel Eto'o. He has scored 18 goals, and he's followed by an Ivory Coast star of yesteryear by the name of Laurent Poku with 14. And sadly, I have to say, the late Nigerian, Rashid Yekini, he scored 13 goals. He was one great striker. We salute him. Indaya Mulamba from the Democratic Republic of Congo, he holds the record for the most goals in a single tournament. He scored 9 in 1974 in Egypt when the DR Congo, who were then known as Zaire, won the title for the second time. What about the record winning margin for matches in the tournament? Well, it's shared by Ivory Coast, who've done it twice, and Guinea, and they've all won by 5 goal margins. Ivory Coast, they trounced Ethiopia 6-1 in 1970, and Guinea 5-0 in 2008, and that was in the quarterfinal. But Guinea got some consolation 3 years ago when they overwhelmed debutants Botswana 6-1 in a group match. What about the coaches? 2 of them, Hassan Shahata of Egypt and Charles Gamfi of Ghana, shared the record for the most titles with 3 each. Gamfi won his titles with the Black Stars in 63, 65, and 82. And Shahata went one better. He won them all in a row. He won in 2006, 2008, and 2010. And of the 29 previous host nations, 11 have won the competition. And the one who did most successfully at home were Egypt. They have, in fact, won in 59, 86, and 2006, and they came 3rd in 1974. So when it comes to hosting the competition, Sonny, the Pharaohs of Egypt are leading the way.
David, it's time now for our first African football quiz question of 2015, and I'm just guessing that it might have some Nations Cup flavor to it.
We promised a Cup of Nations one, Sonny, and my hint last week was defense. And the question is, Sonny, which countries have won the Africa Cup of Nations? Which countries have won the Africa Cup of Nations without conceding any goals in the entire tournament? Now, that's got nothing to do with the qualifiers. It's just the final tournament. And we're going way back, Sonny, to 1957, to the first Africa Cup of Nations, right up to 2013 in South Africa, when Nigeria were crowned champions for the 3rd time. So just to repeat that question again, which countries have won the Africa Cup of Nations title without conceding a single goal in the entire tournament? The deadline for entries will be the day after the Cup of Nations final, which is Monday, February the 9th. So in other words, you've got till midnight on Monday, February the 9th, to get your answers in. And then the following Monday, which is Monday, February the 16th, Sonny will announce the three lucky winners, and he will obviously tell you where to send your entries and give you details of the prizes.
Thank you, David. And now David and I will give our addresses where you can send your answers.
VOA!
It's david.legge, and leg is spelled L-E-G-G-E, at AFP, that's Agence France Presse, .com. So I'll just repeat that one more time. It's david.legge, L-E-G-G-E, at AFP.com.
Well, I'd like to invite our VOA listeners to send me your comments. We appreciate the feedback here at Voice of America headquarters in Washington. You can send me email at sonny@voanews.com. Sonny is spelled S-O-N-N-Y. And pick up a pen or a pencil and a piece of paper. My full postal mailing address is The Sunny Side of Sports, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Room 1613, Washington, D.C., 20237.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I also encourage our VOA listeners to follow The Sunny Side of Sports on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny, and my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. If you go to my Facebook page today, Friday, you'll see a delightful photo of Chuku Chuku, the official 2015 Nations Cup mascot. Chuku Chuku has both arms pointed upward with his hands in a number one gesture. Chuku Chuku has his left foot on an Adidas football, and I should also point out that Chuku Chuku, who I understand is a squirrel, has very long hair, and that hair is colored red, green, blue, and white, the same colors as Equatorial Guinea's national flag. Well, here's hoping the on-field action in Equatorial Guinea will shine brightly over any adversity the small country will face in staging the event. David Legge and other African football experts say this is shaping up as one of the most competitive Nations Cups in recent years. There are 9 former champions in the field, and I think more than a few of those former champs have high hopes of lifting the trophy on February 8th in Bata. Boxing great Muhammad Ali was checked back into a hospital Thursday, just 2 days before his 73rd birthday. Ali has been suffering from a severe urinary tract infection. It's the second time in less than a month he's been hospitalized. VOA's Ted Lanfair filed this feature on the life and legacy of the great Muhammad Ali.
Greatest.
The signature boast of the son of a Kentucky sign painter who took up boxing after neighborhood bullies stole his bicycle. Born Cassius Marcellus Clay, Jr., he was soon known as the Louisville Lip for his taunts and homespun poems in an amateur fighting career topped by a light heavyweight gold medal at the 1960 Summer Olympics in Rome. Clay shocked the boxing world by winning his first 19 professional fights and knocking out Sonny Liston for the World Heavyweight Championship in 1964. "You're an old, ugly bear," Clay said to Liston's face. To describe himself, he offered a verse.
"This brash young boxer is something to see, and the heavyweight championship is his destiny. This kid fights great. He's got speed and endurance. But if you sign to fight him, increase your insurance."
A year before the Liston fight, Cassius Clay had joined the Nation of Islam, known as the Black Muslims, and afterward he announced he had changed his name to Muhammad Ali. "I had been a Negro. I had no confidence," was all he would say on the subject, but he brimmed with self-assurance now. Using a duck-and-weave style that he called his float-like-a-butterfly, sting-like-a-bee technique, he was graceful yet ferocious in the ring. Outside it, he kept crowds and reporters laughing. before his 1975 title fight with Joe Frazier in the Philippines, Ali pulled a toy gorilla out of his pocket.
It will be a killer and a thriller and a killer when I get the gorilla in Manila.
In 1974, a year before the thrilla in Manila bout, fans in Zaire had followed his every move surrounding what came to be called the Rumble in the Jungle with George Foreman.
Even today, I meet people and they bring up the Ali fight, and they still think the fight is going on. They need to be on my side or Ali. They don't know the fight was almost 30 years ago. It doesn't exist anymore, but you learn great lessons from those defeats. You learn that it's just a day in your life. It shouldn't be taken over. It shouldn't consume you. And it's just a moment. And enjoy every moment.
Boumaye, the crowd shouted. Kill him, Ali. Brutal words for perhaps the world's most famous pacifist, who in 1967 refused U.S. military service despite the threat of 5 years in prison and a hefty fine. He said at the time,
"My conscience won't let me go shoot my brother or some darker people or some poor hungry people in the mud for big powerful America and shoot them for what? They never called me nigger."
On college campuses nationwide, Ali spoke out against the Vietnam War while his case was appealed, and ultimately the U.S. Supreme Court reversed his draft evasion conviction. Muhammad Ali won 56 of 61 professional fights in his last two bouts in 1980 and 1981. He was already showing the debilitating effects of Parkinson's disease, the brain disorder that affects muscle control. In one of his last television interviews in 1985,
"I don't know why I'm the most known American on earth."
The shuffle and slurred speech brought on by the baffling disease were evident. The Louisville lip is mostly silent now, replaced by a grinning, some would say gullible man who gives millions of dollars to charities and individuals in need. His critics say he has become a pathetic tool, escorted on stage to raise sympathy and donations by throwing a few imaginary punches. And those who disliked Ali, the playful braggart, blame him for inspiring today's self-centered, loud-mouthed athletes. But John Walter, an adjunct professor of ethnic studies at the University of Washington, calls Ali the quintessential American, generous and caring, provocative, courageous physically and in his convictions, and boastful, but backing up his crowing with incredible deeds. Professor Walter says Ali's influence has reached the world's humblest hamlets.
"Down in Australia among the Aborigines, these people saw him. They took an example from how he conducted his life, that he's willing to stand up for their rights, so to speak, and to excel at the same time. You will find many, many examples of people who say, 'I owe what I'm doing to this man.' That, to me, is profound."
Other words of admiration tumbled upon each other at the dedication of the $80 million Muhammad Ali Center in Ali's hometown of Louisville. Former President Bill Clinton said Ali, who in 1990 negotiated the release of 15 U.S. hostages in direct negotiations with Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein, was a force for peace.
"You proved once again that the power of example matters a lot more than the example of power.
Just be a beautiful light. Ooh, I'll be dancing, I'll be so pretty. Ooh."
Muhammad Ali once said of himself, "He talks a lot and boasts indeed of a power punch and blinding speed." And he asked, "How could anyone not see American in the following? I am the greatest." I'm Ted Lanfair.
Thanks, Ted. The great fighter was honored in 2005 when the Muhammad Ali Center opened in his birthplace of Louisville, Kentucky. Reporter Rick Howlett in Louisville tells us more about the center.
It was boxing that made Muhammad Ali, born Cassius Clay, one of the world's most recognized figures. There's plenty of boxing memorabilia in the Ali Center, but everyone associated with it is quick to say that it's not a shrine to the sport or to the man. Muhammad Ali has battled Parkinson's disease for more than two decades and therefore rarely speaks in public. Lonnie Ali, his wife, is his caretaker and his spokesperson.
"We realized if we were going to pursue this seriously, that it had to be something that spoke to the man in whole, that it had to be something that contributed to society, to others. It couldn't be just about Muhammad, because we never wanted that. We didn't want anything to idolize Muhammad. So what? I mean, what does that do for anybody? Nothing.
In addition to the exhibit celebrating Muhammad Ali's boxing career and the various significant events in his life, there are six pavilions. Center President Michael Fox explains that each represents what Ali calls his core values: respect, confidence, conviction, dedication, giving, and spirituality.
That's the foundation of this institution. There is not another institution on the face of this earth that has that as its underpinning. That is what all of our programming hereafter will evolve from: these six values.
The opening of the Muhammad Ali Center was marked with a series of events, including a celebrity gala and fundraiser attended by notables from the worlds of sports, entertainment, and politics.
The world is a better place because of you.
Former U.S. President Bill Clinton was among those who recognized Ali's achievements.
You thrilled us as a fighter, and you inspire us even more as a force for peace and reconciliation, understanding and respect. And now you've got this center which will enshrine both your thrills and your inspiration and inspire others to follow your lead.
Visitors to the Muhammad Ali Center will see and hear details related to two major events in Ali's life that at the time drew scorn from much of the American public. One was his conversion to Islam in 1964, which prompted his name change. The other came 2 years later when he refused, on religious grounds, to be drafted into military service for the Vietnam War. As the legal battle that resulted from his draft resistance made its way through the courts, Ali would be barred from boxing professionally for 3 years until the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in his favor. Longtime boxing promoter Bob Arum points out that Ali's refusal to join the service predated the American anti-war movement.
People don't remember that the war in Vietnam was not an unpopular war when it started. It became horribly unpopular. He was considered to be a traitor to his country. And he had the courage to stand up to everybody, friends and foe, and to say that what he was doing was the right thing.
It was that event that raised Ali's profile from a pugilist to a peace advocate, according to his friend, musician James Taylor.
He really woke us up. You know, we helped America wake up by associating with his process, really. We came to know so much more about ourselves and about injustice, about just because of the magnetism of his personality and his persona. He captured us all, and we felt what he felt. You know, he was an amazing communicator of his personal experience to so many people. He's an astounding character in our cultural history and on the world stage.
And took away that slave name of Cassius Clay. Now I can go all over the world. All over the world.
As one of the most colorful sports figures in the 1960s and 70s, Muhammad Ali inspired young people around the world. That part of his legacy is showcased in a large mosaic wall made up of 5,000 small wood tiles. Children from 144 nations created the images, reflecting their hopes and dreams. In addition to the many exhibits in the center's 8,600 square meter interior, there are classrooms for community outreach programs. These include a conflict resolution curriculum for children, created with the help of the United Nations, and a variety of self-improvement courses for all ages. The Ali Center's president, Michael Fox, says that like the great athlete it honors, the new facility puts great emphasis on the power of personal development.
We encourage and will work with our visitor public and our participants in our programming to have them think much more about their personal values, much more about their personal development. We often say the Muhammad Ali Center is about Ali, and it's about me, all of us, individually.
I'm Rick Howlett in Louisville, Kentucky.
Thanks, Rick. And here's wishing Muhammad Ali a happy 73rd birthday on Saturday. Just ahead, the voice of America's Tef Tef and Downtown Brown will have our English Premier League football question of the week.
Hey, this is VOA's Downtown Brown, and I'm back again with Question of the Week. The question was, do you think Southampton will finish among the top four in qualifying for the UEFA League Champions League? We had a well amount of responses this week. Steph, can you read one of the responses we had?
What we considered the best response was written by Rex Ostenbohr. He said, finishing top four will surely be a test of character for the Saints. To see the heavyweights like Manchester United and Arsenal behind them on the log will be too big of pressure for them. Don't forget that Southampton is playing in the Capital One Cup. So can they really be playing in three major competitions? The answer is no. At some point, they will collapse. More so, the Saints have never been in this situation before, thus may be affected by the inexperience.
And thanks, Rex, for leaving us a comment, man. Soccer injuries. Jack Wilshere will be back February 28th. Ozil is coming off his recent knee injury and he should be ready for Sunday's game. Danny Welbeck will be out with a hip injury. And moving on to Man U, Van Persie is out with a foot injury. Ashley Young is out also with a hamstring injury. And for Southampton, Wanyama recently injured his hamstring and has no return date so far. Stories, Alex Sanchez and Charlie Austin are on a goal scoring roll with having Alex Sanchez and Charlie Austin are on a goal-scoring spree. Transfer news, Wilfred Bony is now playing with Manchester City. Fernando Torres has left Chelsea and now playing with AC Milan. And check us out on Facebook. Fernando Torres has left Chelsea and now playing with his childhood team, Atletico Madrid. And check us out on Facebook.com/VOASunny for more soccer stories, injuries, transfers, and rumors. So in the studio, we have Tef again to talk to you guys about why is Southampton doing so well this season.
I'm picking the, you know, Rex's comment. I think it covered all the points as far as what I personally see to be Southampton's biggest weakness. It's that they don't have depth, you know. They're such a small team when it comes to, you know, having extra players, and they're still in three competitions. It'll be a first time for them, and I think they can handle the pressure, actually. But at the same time, when you have players like, you know, Schneiderlin getting injured and Wanyama getting injured, it's going to be hard for them to sustain, you know, their run. So I think maybe five games down the road, you'll see all the injuries loading up, and eventually they'll fall down. So it's going to be either Arsenal or Man U fighting for that fourth place.
So do you think Southampton beating Manchester United, was that a lucky win?
It was definitely not a lucky win. I mean, let me put it this way. Southampton have an amazing youth squad. They're known for raising, you know, amazing young talent. So they've replaced the team they lost last year with a new team just as talented. And especially with a coach like Koeman, they have a very good coach that can lead them to at least the Europa Cup. But at the same time, again, depth is what they lack, and they don't have the money to support that. So no matter how good of a run they have, eventually the money teams who have depth in their squad will be triumphant.
I'm VOA's Downtown Brown.
And this is Tef.
And thanks for listening.
Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
Keep on the sunny side, always on the sunny side. Keep on the sunny side of life. It will help us every day. It will brighten all the way. It will keep on the sunny side of life.
Voice of America, VOA, Washington.
I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
And that wraps up another expanded edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America engineer Sule Terawale. Thank you, Sule. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports. Enjoy the Nations Cup this weekend, sports fans.